How's it going, everybody? This is Will John Grande here with the first episode of 19-Year-Old Shrink. Let me first tell you about myself. I am a sophomore psychology major at Loyola Marymount, currently in LA just taking online classes and enjoying the time with my friends. Now, first question you guys are probably asking is, why the hell did you name your show 19-Year-Old Shrink? I also get asked a lot by my friends what I'm gonna do when I'm not 19. And outside looking in, I'd be wondering the exact same thing, why a 25-year-old weirdo is still calling himself the 19-year-old shrink. But I got plans on how to get around it, don't you worry, guys. But why 19-year-old shrink? Everyone who has ever been through the college process, whether they're going through it now, did a few years back, or have been 20, 30, maybe even 40 years removed from it, have always been asked two questions. And those two questions are, what schools are you applying to, and what's your major going to be? And you're not just asked these questions, you're asked these questions excessively. And for me, the peak of these questions was Christmas my senior year. See, we all have these relatives that come during the holidays that we don't really know, but we're always put into a conversation with them. And don't act like you don't have one of those, because everyone does. If you don't have one now, it's going to happen in the future. Guarantee it. Who knows, maybe you'll even become one of those relatives, or maybe I will. We'll see. But anyways, I'm minding my own business, watching Christmas Vacation, and I make eye contact with one of those aunts. First mistake. I see her approaching. I look over at my brother, and I'm like, yo, Danny, what's her name again? He told me right before she came, and then she asked me, Will, where are you applying? Oh, I got into LMU. What's your major going to be? Psychology. She immediately got less enthusiastic and asked, oh, do you want to be like a shrink? A what? A shrink, like a therapist. Oh, no, not for me. And it was weird because the more and more I kept telling people that I wanted to be a psychology major, the more and more they kept asking me whether I wanted to be a shrink. And when it came time to deciding a name for the show, I figured, well, I'm going to be talking about topics related to therapy, so why not throw in a little irony? Thus, 19-year-old Shrink was born. And although the topics are centered around psychology, I'm not that guy going up to people at parties asking them about their self-development and meditation experience. I promise. You would think that with a 19-year-old dude hopping in front of a mic talking about feelings, but actually it's the opposite. I never talk about this stuff with my friends, so this will definitely be an exciting and fun opportunity. So now, the why. Why am I doing this? So I've always had a close relationship with my mom and dad, and I'd say about 5 years ago, I was having a conversation with my dad, and he was telling me, Will, I don't have any regrets in life, but if I were to do something over, I'd start earlier. And I asked him, I'm like, what do you mean start earlier, Dad? And he said, have more intentionality, more direction when I was younger so I wouldn't have to figure all that stuff out when I was 40. And this really stood out to me because at the time I'm 14 years old, I have my entire life in front of me, and I still do. But knowing that I had the opportunity to capitalize on what my father wished he did was such an empowering thought to process. And this podcast will be a great platform for me to capitalize on that. And also to ask of you guys, what areas in your life do you want to capitalize on? Maybe you're feeling really anxious and you don't know why. Or you're caught up in the good old days before COVID happened. I know I have. Whatever it is, I'm excited to be a place for you to explore that. But one very important thing that I need you guys to know is that although I'm very passionate about psychology, I am not an expert. I'm still 19, making a ton of mistakes, and just a couple months ago felt so lost but stumbled upon a podcast that changed everything for me. Imagine me as being one of your friends, and the only difference between us is that I use this podcast to communicate what I learn. This dynamic should be like a filter. I filtered out everything that was helpful for me from what experts said, and my job is to present you with what I've learned so that you can filter out what helped you the most. And the reason that I have guests on the show is so that I can learn as well. And me speaking about topics just like I'm doing right now is to help reinforce those ideas. And every single piece of advice that I give is something I'm actively working on in my own life. So now, Let's hop into more about why I'm doing this and provide some useful advice for you to take with you. As mentioned, my father's advice, very impactful for me. But it wasn't something I began taking action toward until earlier this year. I just liked the thought of it. That's it. And in order to understand what caused that change, we must start in March of 2020. Now, we're all probably thinking the same thing during this time. What the hell is going on? And I'm up at my friend's in San Francisco, just having a good time, and all of a sudden I see LMU, closed for the remainder of the year. And I go down to LA, pack up my stuff in Whalen, shout out room 182, and drive out to my mom's house in Palm Desert for the remainder of the year. And what am I doing here? Probably what most of us are doing, watching a lot of TV. And for me, it was Seinfeld. I'd be watching Festivus, the Soup Nazi episode is a classic, then you got Bizarro Jerry, which is a very underrated episode. Still, highly recommend it. And I was laughing my ass off. But I noticed every single day I felt worse and worse. And knowing me, I'm a very analytical person, I'm always analyzing and overthinking situations, so I was asking myself, well, why am I feeling this way? And I began to realize I didn't really have a purpose. I wasn't really contributing on a day-to-day basis. Every day felt like Groundhog Day. Again, if you guys haven't seen the movie, highly recommend it. It's with Bill Murray, he's a weatherman, and every day he wakes up and relives the same day. And that's what was happening for me. I would wake up, eat the same three eggs, watch TV for a couple hours, go to class, then I'd go outside for like 15 minutes and skateboard, and that would be like my outdoor time for the day. Then I'd eat takeout, usually In-N-Out, so two double doubles, fries, and a shake. But back to the subject. I would watch more TV, go to sleep, and repeat. I would do the same cycle every single day, just like what Bill Murray was experiencing in the movie. And wrapped up in that cycle was just a lack of purpose, a lack of contribution. And I'm sure you guys could relate, but COVID made me believe it was a time of lacking purpose. Because everything is closing up around us. You got the restaurants, beaches, hiking trails, they're all gone. For you sports fans out there, I love sports. Dodgers, Lakers, they're no longer playing. And my reaction to this was like, oh, I don't have those external things that gave me the quote unquote purpose and contribution I felt in my life. So without them, this time is useless. And granted, there were restrictions. There was nothing in our control to change that. But I didn't realize that I could handle those restrictions in my life. One perfect example of this, I'm sitting in the same chair on a Friday night, watching TV, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, I could be doing so many better things than what I'm doing right now. And that is a terrible way to approach a situation. If we're being honest here, a month earlier, we're meeting new people, trying out new experiences, getting involved on campus, everything a college kid should be doing. And fast forward a month, and I'm just sitting on my couch watching TV. Now, if a guy comes up to you in the middle of the street and asks, which of the situations is better, which one are you gonna pick? You bet your ass it's gonna be the first one. There's no denying that. But there was nothing we could do to bring that first situation back for us. And me not recognizing this led me to asking myself questions that made me feel helpless. And some of those questions were, why is this happening to me? Why couldn't this just happen in a couple years? Why didn't this just happen to our parents when they were younger? And these questions influence how I acted every single day. Whatever questions we ask ourselves, what they do is they help crystallize our beliefs and point our focus in a specific direction. And that could be good or bad. And when I asked questions that made me feel less in control, I acted in a way that reflected those questions. And what was my driving force of these questions? Comparison. And not necessarily comparison to others, but comparison from one point in your life to another. So being locked inside gave us much more freedom with our time and allowed me to choose the things that would heighten that comparison in my life. And ultimately, the purpose I felt for myself. So what were those things? The big ones were social media and the news. And we'll start with social media. Because of these crazy times, if we want to go on social media for 8 hours in a day, by all means we could, and that's what I did. Because during these times, we're lacking that connection. We can't see our loved ones or friends as much as we would want to. And this is such a basic human need of ours. It's the most important human need, to stay connected. And what social media provides is that means to stay connected, but it also has its downfalls, and that's what I experienced. So I'd go on social media, I'd scroll through my feed, and I see all these people who are smiling, having a good time, and I'm just sitting at home wondering what I'm doing wrong. I started asking myself questions like, well, why am I not having a good time? And I started to get those answers. Next, the news. This is a big one. Again, people want to stay connected. And although the news is very negative, they want something to talk about when their friends call them or when they have a family Zoom call. And that's how I approach the situation. I'd watch the news, I'd hear my boy Fauci talking about all the precautions we need to take, but also all the restrictions we have. And I would start comparing my life now to what it used to be before COVID happened. And my focus shifted to all the things I couldn't do. Because we all see these things closing up, and I'd say, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that. And I started acting in a way that reflected those reactions. And I'm not just bringing this up to tell you the different types of comparison. I bring it up as a transition to how we can use them to our advantage in our lives. So now I'll share my experience learning how to take advantage of it so it can help you guys do the same thing. So we're gonna go back to my freshman year. So for all you LMU kids, I would always skate through the back entrance on Loyola Boulevard. And when I got past the layer, I'd run into people talking, throwing a football, or just going to class. And definitely, hands down, what I miss most about college is really just running into people. Because you didn't have to plan to hang out like you have to now. You could kind of just run into someone and be like, oh, let's go do something. And it was awesome. Whether it be going to Manhattan Beach, Malibu, maybe going to a sports game, but also just different spots on campus were great as well. So you got, for like freshmen, definitely Pizza Hut, because you'd have like 30 to 40 people in one building eating pretty subpar pizza, but having a good time. We'd also have these concerts that LMU would put on, like Fallapalooza, Troy Boy. Those were a good time. And you would have all these extracurriculars where you got to meet so many new people while also doing something that you love. But above all else, what those events provided for me was, for those times that I was feeling anxious, insecure, not confident, they would give me a short-term solution to those problems. And anyone that probably knows me wouldn't think that I had bad anxiety, but I did. And oftentimes we have the tendency to compare what we're feeling inside to how others appear outside. And trust me, coming from someone who might seem confident on the outside, you're definitely not the only one. So back to how those events helped me. So let's say there's a Dodger game on Friday. It's Tuesday. I'm noticing I'm feeling anxious. For me, it felt like a legit rock in the middle of my chest. And it's different for certain people. And I would use the excitement for that Dodger game on Friday to help distract me from what I was feeling on Tuesday. But when that Dodger game ends on Friday, what do you think happened? I needed to find another event to distract me for the next time those feelings came up. Everything I was doing to cope with this was externally generated and conditional. And many of us may do this without even noticing. I didn't even realize it until the beginning of my sophomore year. So I'm skating towards that same gate, and what do I notice? The gate's closed. And I realize, wow, I don't have those same things that helped me out in the short term last year. I need a long-term solution. I could spend time sitting on my ass waiting for everything to get back to normal and waste a year of my life, or come back next year in a better position than it would have been if this year were just normal. And this is where comparison from one point in my life to another benefited me greatly. And the first step I knew I needed to take was asking better questions. And the first question I asked myself was, I'm going to take it from my dad. He's probably going to mention it later. What would this look like if it were easy? I feel like many of us, including myself, have all these limitations we set for ourselves unconsciously. But what this question put into focus was, what if those limitations didn't even exist? They don't exist. What would I do from there? So some of these limitations, although not true for me, were triggered by comparison. So I began asking some additional questions like, where can I eliminate comparison in my life? From there, I began acting in a way that answered that question. So that was slowly weaning myself off social media and the news. I also had the belief that we really couldn't do much with our time. So I asked myself, what do I love to do that I normally feel like I can't because of distractions? Because although we may feel limited during this time, we do have more free time to explore those things that benefit us. And this turned my attention to those opportunities. I wanted to be more calm, more self-reliant, more confident. And what do I mean by self-reliant? So all of last year, if my mom, dad, or any family member called me up, asked how I was doing, usually I would say I was fine. You know the phrase when you say you're fine, but you're really not? That was me. But last year was different. Because I was lacking that connection, I was looking for any source of it in my life. And maybe this has happened to you guys, but sometimes we have a swarm of negativity in our life and we look to the same person or group to allow us to vent. Because most of the time, they're gonna support us and say it's out of our control. And we appreciate that. Because this takes the obligation of us having to change off of our shoulders. It's not our fault, it's the situation. And this is what my family was doing for me. They were saying, Will, it's your freshman year, you're just adjusting, and this would allow me to normalize these feelings and say, it's just something you gotta deal with right now, and since I believed it was normal, I wouldn't do any work to get me to a better place. And this was exactly what I wanted to hear. Those calls became so addicting because I was scared of change and they supported that. But when sophomore year came, I realized asking better questions would cause that change. I wanted to know, okay, I'm feeling anxious, I'm feeling insecure, but I have the tools to get out of it. And that's not saying don't ever talk to your family about what's going on in your life. But knowing that you have what it takes to get out of those situations is really empowering. But again, it's one thing to recognize this as an appealing thought. It's another thing to actually act on it. And in order to do that, I had to build a framework around these new questions. And you guys can do it this way, but you can also do it in your own way that works best for you. So I split it into three separate categories. Where have I been? Where am I now? And where do I want to go? So where have I been? That's pre-COVID. Where am I now? It's sophomore year and I recognize we need a long-term solution. Where do I want to go? A place that has that long-term solution. So we're going to start with pre-COVID. This is where I'm asking myself questions or making excuses like, I'm too busy, I'm hanging out with my friends so I can't do this, schoolwork is really heavy this week, that was a big one. And when I started making those excuses and asking myself those questions, I started to find those answers. So I'd do a little bit of self-work in the morning, meditate a little bit, maybe listen to a quick podcast, and that would be 10% of my day. But the rest of the day, the 90%, that was classes, extracurriculars, food, hanging out with friends. But what would happen is I wouldn't use what I was learning from those podcasts or what I was experiencing in the meditation to help me in the rest of my day. So I would still feel anxious. I would still feel insecure. I would still feel less confident than I would have wanted to be. Now, we're going to fast forward a little bit. It's my sophomore year. I'm asking myself bad questions. Why is this happening to me? Why couldn't this happen in a couple years? And I'm not trying to sound like a broken record, but again, those actions would reflect those questions. So I would do 10% self-work, again, a little bit of meditation in the morning, and listen to a podcast, and the rest of the day would be 50% classes and friends because there were no extracurriculars, and it's not like I could have gone to the dining hall at all. And then there's the remaining 40%. And this 40% dictated how I felt during these times. This was the going on social media, watching the news, and then those insecurities came up even more because I was focused on what I couldn't do during those times. But in the moment outside the gate, I knew that I had to change the questions that I'm asking myself. And that's where I wanted to go. So how can I eliminate comparison in my life? What do I love to do that I normally feel like I can't because of distractions? And that was listening to podcasts, meditation, things that would allow me to be that person I want to be, and ultimately capitalize on what my father wished he did. So I knew I needed to focus more on the self-work instead of the things that were getting in my way. So I shifted that 40% to what would help me reach my goal. So then it would be 50% self-work and 50% classes and friends. And this is where I'm at now. And I'm still working on this every single day. But what happens is when things become a habit for you, they become a part of your identity. and you carry your identity with you throughout the entire day. So although I'm only doing that for part of the day, it's carrying with me throughout those times that might be frustrating in other areas of my life. So let's say I get a bad grade on a test, or my friend pisses me off from something he said. I would use what I learned earlier on and apply it so that I could be more calm, more self-reliant. So now, what I want to ask you guys is, what's that 40%? Maybe it's 50. Maybe it's 60. Maybe it's consuming your entire day to the point where you can't get anything done. But what is it? And what questions can you ask yourself to change that narrative? And once you do that, you're going to start finding the answers. And again, I want this to be ingrained in your head. I'm still 19. I'm still learning just like yourself, and I'm still making a ton of mistakes. And I was in a place just a couple months ago where I didn't have an outlet for answers. And that's what I hope I can provide for you guys, an outlet into how you can capitalize in your own life. But now, we will hear from my father, James John Grande, who will give you his experience as to when he needed to change and give you the tools necessary for change in your own life. So here's my father, James John Grande. And just a little background information on him. He graduated from the Smith School of Business at University of Maryland, College Park, in 1990 with a degree in finance. He was a co-founder of Altium Wealth Management in Purchase, New York back in 2010, and his company revolves around finding each employee's unique ability and using it to help each client in the most productive way possible. Today, we won't be talking too much about finances, but I think it's important to recognize that you don't need to be a shrink or psychology major to apply this to your own life. So Dad, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me on. Looking forward to hearing what kind of questions you throw at me. I don't know if they're going to add any value, but hopefully somebody will benefit from it in some way, shape, or form. But I'm looking forward to having a lot of fun with you with this.
So I talked a lot earlier on about the conversations where you said you wish you had more intentionality, more focus, more direction earlier on, so you didn't have to worry about it when you were 40. So when was that moment for you? And when did you know it was time to make a change? And what was happening in your life that allowed you to recognize that?
When I got out of college and I moved to Vermont and I got into the financial services business, it was always about seeking for me. I was always seeking either a way to be better, a way to be happy, right? It's the pursuit of happiness. I knew I was unemployable. When I got out of college with a degree in finance, every job I had was as a caddy, I was a bartender. I never really worked for anybody. I always liked to control my time and my life in some way, shape, or form. And to answer your question, as far as was there a moment in time, was there an inflection point? I would say 40 years old. I had a reasonable level of success in my career. I was a financial advisor, and I still am. But I was doing it in my own practice as in part of a larger organization. I had a pretty nice life, right? We had three great kids, lived in a nice town, and I was playing a lot of golf. I was having a good time, but I wasn't feeling fulfilled. And I really wasn't feeling confident. I felt like everything I was doing was to please others and not really myself. And until I could get comfortable with myself, like I think business and life, it's about attraction, not promotion, right? So every time I felt like up until that point when I was 40 or so, I always felt like I was selling, I was pushing, I was grinding to get what I thought I wanted. And at 40, I realized that wasn't really getting me happiness. And what I learned was it's more fun when you're comfortable in your own skin, when you're not trying to do anything to please anybody else, but doing it because it's just the right thing. And you're feeling grateful in your life. And for me, it was a seeking, getting comfortable with the fact that I didn't have to impress anybody but myself. And once I got comfortable with that fact, and that didn't mean I did a bunch of things to be self-absorbed or anything at that point. It actually was quite the opposite. I just wasn't pretending anymore. And at that time, I began this process of really just looking to help people, to share ideas, to be a better person each day. And that would help me ultimately, as I look back on the last 12 years or so, become much more successful. It's kind of interesting. Sometimes when you stop trying so hard, things become easier. And when you're finding your true purpose, things become a lot easier. I think when I push, there was a book I read called Power Versus Force. And I read it, I don't know, maybe about 15 years ago. And I probably wasn't smart enough to understand it at the time. But there's a difference between using force and using power. And for me, up until that point, I was forcing my way through life. I was grinding it out. I was working hard, but I wasn't being true to myself in a lot of ways. And I think when you're being powerful, you have to be true to yourself and identify, what is it that I'm good at? What is it that makes me happy? How can I be of service to others? And once I started really getting comfortable with that, things started to change.
I know you've had a lot of influences along the way, but who is that one person that really helped you change?
I had a few, I would say there's several people, but unfortunately my father had passed away when I was 34, so I didn't have him to lean on like I might have at that time. And he was a good source of inspiration for me. But I it was interesting. I picked up a client a year after my dad died, and I talk about this with him all the time. His name is Jim Daniels. And Jim, he was the kind of person I wanted to be. And he had a great relationship with his kids. He was just a good man. He had a real faith, and he'd been through a lot of tragedy in his life and came out on the other side with nothing but grace and gratitude. He had what I wanted, you know, and then there have been other people since then. Another friend of mine, Jack Drinkwater, who is just an amazing man, who he retired a handful of years ago, and he spends his life just showing up for people. You know, he was an electrician by trade, and he's pretty handy, and he's just always there for people, and he's busy all day long, and he's not married, he has no children, he's about 70 years old, he looks great, he takes fantastic, he's strong as an ox, and the guy shows up for everybody. And I said to him, I want my life, like that's what I strive to be like, is somebody that spends his time helping other people. Those two people, watching how they carry themselves, has really helped influence who I am.
Yeah, what's great also is that it allows you to be held accountable for whatever goals you do have. And I feel like so many people, including myself, we struggle to be specific about our goals. Can you explain why that is and why it's important to overcome that?
That's a really good question. I think sometimes clarity is really important because people really don't think they don't really know what they want, or they say it to themselves. Our brain is kind of interesting in the way we say things. So sometimes when we say we don't want something, we actually get the thing we don't want because you can't put a negative in it. So you have to be really clear on what it is that we ask for. And there's a quote by Tim Ferriss that says, life punishes the vague wish and rewards the specific ask. And hearing that on a podcast really got me thinking a few years ago about how clear and how important it is to be clear on what it is that I want, because you'll get it.
So after listening to Tim Ferriss talk about this stuff, what struggles were you thinking of that you need to improve in your own life?
I don't know if I had struggles. I would say I just had a lack of awareness. But once I became clear on I needed to be clear, it became a lot easier for me. And so I just started asking myself, when I start, you know, one of the things Tim talked about was asking, the more powerful questions you ask yourself, the more powerful the results. So I had to get really clear on the questions I asked myself. And when I got clear on those questions, then it became clear on the path I needed to take to answer those questions.
So what were some of those questions?
So my favorite question that I heard him ask, which I've just started asking myself at that time, was, what would this look like if it were easy? And this can be anything. And I think that's an incredibly fun question, right? So if I started thinking to myself, what would life look like if it were easy? I started getting pretty creative with that. I said, well, I'd be sitting in front of business owners that are thinking of selling their business in the next couple of years, because those are great clients for us. I'd have the time to exercise and stay in shape. I'd be playing the best golf of my life. I'd be in a relationship with the woman of my dreams. Like, that'll go, and my relationships with my kids would be rich and rewarding. And the fact that we're sitting here at this point in time doing this, it feels pretty rich and rewarding to me. So I ask myself questions like that. And when you ask yourself a question like that, you start getting answers.
Were there any bad questions you were asking yourself?
Why was Will my son? No, okay. No, I'm kidding. No, actually, it wasn't questions I asked myself. I became really conscious of the thoughts I chose to think. But one of the questions that I hear people ask themselves over and over again that I avoid ever asking myself is, why does this always happen to me, right? I have members in my family, I have people I know that they look at the tough, why everything has to be so hard and it doesn't have to be so hard. And when you start thinking about bad things happening to you, they usually do. Life becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, so you better choose really good thoughts.
So you're always talking about the book, Think and Grow Rich. You mentioned how it discusses being more clear with your goals. Can you explain how that applies to your own life?
Sure. Well, clarity of thought is really important. One of the things that I was told, though, also to have a messy room leads to a messy mind. And I'm looking around your bedroom right now, man, and you got to clean up. You got to shave that neck of yours. You got to have a little more cleanliness in your life to have that clarity that we're looking for. So first off, clean your room.
It's the holidays.
All right.
It's the holidays, yeah. Man.
Boy, it must be a holiday every day then. So anyway, I think that book, Think and Grow Rich, so getting back to that book, it was introduced to me four years ago by a friend of mine, John Durante. John and I have known each other for close to 15 years. And we met through this organization in Westchester called the Business Council of Westchester. And we put together a group of young entrepreneurial types that were looking to better their lives. And we would meet regularly to talk about our goals. And we did that for a few years, and then certain people moved away and things kind of slowed down. But we all started accomplishing a lot of things in our life. This is going back to 2006. But then 4 years ago, John said, we got to get the band back together. And he said, we should read the book, Think and Grow Rich. So what we did was, I took it upon myself to read the book and type up about 40 pages of notes on the book. And I sent it out to this group of guys that we met with pretty regularly. But one of the things that this book helped us do was create a vision statement or a mantra. And in that mantra, you were to put a date in time or a moment in time that you wanted to accomplish certain things by. And I know the book Think and Grow Rich makes you think it's all about money. And for some, it can be. So I did certainly have financial goals, but I also had all these other personal life goals that most of them have manifested. So I started this in 2016, and I started envisioning what an ideal life would look like for me. And started saying this statement to myself twice a day. And all of a sudden, all these things that I thought were going to be stretches in my life started happening. And it really made me buy into it. So we formed this mastermind group of people that we'd meet once a month. We probably should have done it more frequently, but we did it. We read out loud a page at a time. We passed the book around and read a chapter a month. And we talk about that chapter. And it really helped cement, and I've read this book over and over again, but it really helped cement the principles of that book and help me understand how important it is to set clear goals and to think about them on a daily basis.
So how do you pick who's a part of that group, and why is it important to have one in the first place?
Do you want to pick people that are forward thinking, that want a life better than they have right now, that they're always looking to be better tomorrow than they are today, and the people that are generally givers by nature rather than takers? And you want people who, at least for me, I wanted people who were givers, not takers, people who were forward thinking, and people that be supportive. One of the things they said in the book Think and Grow Rich was, when you create your mastermind group, you want to do it with people that are going to support you in the attainment of goals, because it's tough and it's lonely at the top of any field that you want to get into. And there's going to be all these people in your life that are going to tell you why you can't do what you set out to do. So if you're sharing your dreams with somebody, be really careful who you share them with, because there's going to be plenty of people to tell you why you'll fail, and you got to keep those people out of your life, or at least don't talk about your dreams with them. So finding a mastermind group of people who will be supportive of your dreams is really important.
And let's say, okay, so for that mastermind group, let's say it's a 15-year-old, 16, maybe they're just in college or something like that. They might wonder, well, where do I find this? Where can I find these resources if not everyone's really interested in this stuff yet? How do you recommend going about that?
You know, I think with social media and technology today, it makes the universe really big, right? So there are people that you can meet all over the country that have similar interests, right? So you might follow certain authors, people that are self-help gurus, or, you know, people like Tony Robbins, or people like Ed Milet, or people like Tim Ferriss, or all these people that are inspiring others to get the best version of themselves out there. And you might share a podcast with a friend that they're on, and then see what they think. It doesn't have to be a quick process. It can be a very discerning, slow process. One of the best quotes I've learned from Stephen Covey, who wrote 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, was, with people, fast is slow and slow is fast. So every time I'm in a hurry, it doesn't work out. But when I go slow and I really think through things, but always am taking some level of action, that's when good things happen. So I would just say, you can find the people, whether it's one by one, by sharing different podcasts and seeing how people respond to it, or maybe it through social media groups. But you'd be surprised, even just sharing with your friends, that you're looking to find people that are around your age that are forward thinkers that want a great life. Once again, life punishes the vague wish and rewards the specific ask. If you start telling people that's who you're looking to meet, those people are going to be put into your life.
So I've read in many places and seen for myself, people achieve a goal and they go back to the habits they had before pursuing it. A perfect example of this is weight loss. So someone might say, I want to lose 30 pounds. And they do everything in their power. They're specific about it. They have the mission statement like you mentioned. But what happens when they lose those 30 pounds? They go back to the habits they had before pursuing that goal. Can you explain why this happens?
I think a couple of reasons would be, as somebody who's taken off weight and put it back on, is you think, a lot of times people say, well, once I have this, then I'll be happy, right? Because they equate the weight loss with happiness or feeling good about themselves. And then they realize, wow, this isn't all it was cracked up to be. I don't feel as great as I thought I'd feel. And they say, well, what's the use then? And then they give up, right? Or they, you know, or maybe the thing that they thought they wanted really just wasn't really what they wanted, right? So we think that if we achieve a certain net worth, or we have a certain thing happen in business, or whatever it is, whatever the big goal is that we have, we think that that's going to fulfill us in some way. And it doesn't fulfill us as much as we want. And as a result, we kind of stop.
So you've always had a lifelong goal of running the 4-hour marathon, and congrats on finally achieving that. You'd be waking up at 6 a.m., you're grinding out 8 miles before I even wake up. What went into that process, and how do you keep that same drive after achieving a goal?
This was a big year for me. So I've run 3 marathons now, 4 in my life. The first one I did when I was 28 years old, I did the Marine Corps Marathon, I did it in 4:08. About 10 years later, I did the New York Marathon, did it in 4:15. A few years ago, when I was 49, I did the Philadelphia Marathon in 4 hours and 20 minutes. And I said to myself, you know what? I want to be better than that. I want to hit this goal of breaking 4 hours. So I have a good friend of mine, Steve Kerchevsky, who coaches endurance athletes, and we run together. And he gave me the game plan. So one of the things I learned this year is you need other people to help you accomplish your goals. And I brought in help, and it was really hard. And he was a good friend of mine, and he set out a plan from early January, and I worked the plan. He told me to get to a certain weight. I got close, but not all the way, and I accomplished it. And it was a tremendous feeling of joy, but I knew I was gonna break it. I was prepared to break it, and I did it. I was 15 minutes better than I ever was, and it was 24 years later, and I felt very proud of that. But I also recognized right away the thing that you just said, which was, how do I stay motivated now that I've accomplished this goal?
So how do you stay motivated?
I think it's constantly and continually having something to shoot for. I think people are more fulfilled when they're pursuing something. So I had to figure out quickly. It's funny, as I was working towards this marathon, I was listening to a couple great books. One was Atomic Habits by James Clear, and the other one is It Takes What It Takes by Trevor Moad. And in those books, he started hearing about people accomplishing things and then letting up. And I'm like, I can't do that. So what can I do to amp it up after the fact and be better? Pride is a double-edged sword, right? It can motivate you, but you got to be careful not to be too proud. It can be an arrogant thing too.
So shifting gears here, when we're younger, we're always told, enjoy your teens, enjoy your 20s. Everything will figure itself out. And I think that's very important to really enjoy these times, leaving those Thursday nights open, leaving the Fridays, leaving the Saturdays, and spending it with your friends, whatever that is. But knowing what you know now, what would you say differently to a young person?
I would say that. But I think you should enjoy your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. I think life is to be enjoyed, right? I think there's a balance that we have. And I think for me, one of the things I found is when I have structure in my life, I have more freedom, right? So people, you know, a lot of times they just go and have fun and they think they're free and they're really not free, right? And that can be in business and any other area. So when I was in college, my first couple of years, I had, you know, all my grades, my first semester was probably my best. I did a 3.8 and at Maryland, and I was studying 3 hours a day. I was either studying from 3 to 6 or 6 to 9 every day. I was going to the gym or playing basketball for a couple hours a day. I was at after dinner and after my studying, after 9 o'clock, I was watching David Letterman and hanging out with the people in my dorm and having a lot of fun. Or, you know, when I was in my fraternity or pledging, I had a good time. And on the weekends, I was going to Washington, D.C. and really enjoying myself. But I'd study maybe Sunday night through Thursday night, 3 hours a day, and I did really well. And then I moved into my fraternity house or right by my fraternity house, my junior year in college. Yeah, exactly. And I was the guy where people would be like, hey, you want to go out tonight? And I'd be like, no, I got to do work. And they'd be like, come on. And I'd be like, okay. and I gave up my habits that worked for me, right? And I wasn't nearly as fulfilled and I wasn't nearly as free. And my grades plummeted my last 2 years of college. And I felt like I just escaped college. You can have everything. You can have joy and fun, and having structure and discipline and consistent intellectual curiosity will give you the freedom that you want to have the fun that you want. And you'll feel a lot better about yourself too when you have that structure in your life.
So you're in the fraternity, you're having a good time, but you're lacking that freedom. What were some of those doubts you were experiencing, and what were the questions you were asking yourself that led to those doubts?
Well, I did have freedom. I just wasn't using it the right way. But I will say I had freedom of time and choice, but I was not free in my mind, right? And I wasn't taking advantage of the opportunities that were given to me at that great school. I will say in 1988, where were my doubts? I was in a fraternity. The people were funnier than me. They were better looking than me. They were wittier. They were quick. They were more confident. They had what we call rap. They were very fast talking, smooth, good sales guys that I just almost didn't get the playbook, right? So I had doubt.
Window sellers.
Yeah, exactly. The window sellers, right? They were great. They were selling windows in DC area and making a lot of money. And I couldn't believe they would go up to these people's doors and knock on the doors and they would be able to sell. I could not sell to save my life. But I learned later that selling actually takes on different forms. There's different types of salespeople, and I found the type of sales that was good for me. And I'm also an oldest child, right? And so what happens is, I think for me as an oldest child, I didn't get the playbooks that some people had that had older brothers and sisters. I think like you get the lucky, you're lucky you're the youngest because you get the playbook on how to be cool from your older brother and sister.
And you guys lose expectations in me.
Yeah, exactly. We had no expectations.
Exactly.
Yeah, act helpless and be helped, right? Yeah, so So for me at that time, I really struggled with, like, on the outside, I had all these things, but I didn't feel good on the inside. So my insides did not match my outsides. Like if you ask most people about me, I think they would have said those things about me, but I didn't feel great insides. And I saw these other people whose outsides seem better than my insides, right? And there's a saying, don't compare your insides to other people's outsides. And I've learned that over time, and it's really helped me to not do that anymore. But back then, I think that's something I struggled with. I just didn't have the confidence that you think I would have had or should have had.
So it seemed like it was a very interesting time for you back then. Would you say that you were happy?
I definitely was happy. I think it's just different than it is now.
How is it different?
I think happiness then was with external stuff, right? Did I have a lot of friends? Was I dating a cute girl? Was I laughing a lot? Was I playing sports well? I don't know. I was doing stupid things. I think the more stupid stuff we did, the happier we were at that time. Right?
Care to talk about some of those?
Not
things?
At all. and I think, but listen, I did a lot of stupid things. I think you kids today are much better than I was. I think happiness to me back then was derived on what other people thought about me. And I think today happiness is internally generated, and confidence is internally generated. I think there's a saying that to build self-esteem, you got to do esteemable acts, right? And I think it's certainly since I was 40, I really focused on what can I be doing to help other people. And that helping other people has given me confidence and happiness. And I find when I'm thinking about myself, I'm not happy, right? When I'm thinking of others, I'm happy. And if I, can I make somebody else's life better? I think that gives me a lot of happiness today.
You also mentioned that, you know, a lot of college-age kids now are different. They're more impressive. Can you explain why you think that is and how it's different from the college experience that you had growing up?
I think number one, actually, it's actually more cool to be smart today than it was when I was growing up. So 30 some odd years ago, it's probably cooler to be a jock or an athlete. And today, now you have to be both, right? I mean, obviously the athletes are pretty cool, but you want to be a smart kid too. And I actually, when I was growing up, it was so bad. Like I was offered to be an honors program at Maryland that I turned it down because I didn't want to be, I wanted to be with the cool kids, right? So that was really dumb. And I think about the things I did back then.
But, the Animal House days.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, I think that they're impressive today also because they have access to so much more information at their fingertips. So they might not necessarily be more driven or harder working, but the ease in which they can get to their destination is a lot faster. Meaning if you have an interest in something today, you can research it right away. Back then, we had to go to the library and all of the information in there was in these really old books that really wasn't relevant. Right now, you have up-to-the-minute information. And I think today also, you're impressive because if you're not impressive today, you're going to fall behind. The world is moving really fast. And one of the key traits that somebody has to have is the ability to adapt to a quickly changing environment.
You just mentioned that we're living in a faster paced society with all this technology around us. But one of the most important things in life is having that time to relax. So how do you organize that time in your own life?
So there's a couple different ways. That's a great point and great question. There was a book that I read, it's probably 17 years ago. I was in this program called the Strategic Coach up in Toronto, and he had the suggested reading list. And one of them was called The Progress Paradox. And it's like how we were improving society with all this technology and all these things that were happening, but yet people were less happy. And if anybody has a cell phone or a computer and you're constantly barraged with emails and texts and things like that, where you have to respond to things, or you feel like you have to respond to things, it can be really miserable. And one of the things when I did this, it was an entrepreneurial coaching program I started in 2003, which ultimately led to us forming our company. They talked about this concept of a free day. And a free day, it's really important, especially for entrepreneurs or really anybody, to rejuvenate, where you're not spending, when you're doing something that you completely love, that rejuvenates you, where you're not reading business stuff, you're not reading emails, you're not doing anything that's going to give you that kind of stress. And that rejuvenation is where creativity happens. So taking a full day can be a challenge at times, but I find when I take a free day, it's amazing. But then the other thing that people can do is set aside time simply to meditate. Now, meditation is a practice. It's not something that happens easy. I'm getting better at it over time, but I'll say if you can set aside 10, 15, 20 minutes, I use guided meditations all the time. And
Deepak
Chopra, and he's fantastic. And I've met him. I had a good fortune of meeting him, and I got to tell him how much he's meant to me. But I do take the time to rejuvenate, and meditation is a big part of that rejuvenation. I feel if I can get centered for 10, 15, 20 minutes a day, I'm a lot better off. And if you look at some of the more successful people in the world, they all meditate. So there's got to be something to it. It gives you clarity of mind. It gives you peace and comfort. And it allows that restlessness to settle down a little bit.
Obviously, because of COVID-19, we have more of that time to devote to clarity of mind. So what changes have you made in response to the pandemic?
So my friend Jack Drinkwater, who I mentioned before, early in COVID, we went for a walk. And I was talking about how some days, because I'm in the financial service industry, the markets were going crazy. It was stressful. And my mind could be in knots. And then other days I felt like I could sit and watch Netflix and binge watch and do things like that. And he said to me, you can do hard time, you can do easy time, or you can use the time. And when he said that was so profound that I said, okay, well, how can I use this time? And I wasn't doing a lot of driving during, you know, which I used to do a fair amount of driving, and think about how many hours you waste behind the wheel of a car. So, and I'm fortunate enough to live by the beach. And I said, and I remember when I bought this house a couple of years ago, I said to myself, boy, it'd be really nice to like enjoy sitting on the porch and enjoy the sunrise a little bit. And I wasn't doing that. And the second this COVID thing happened, I said, wow, I'm going to take advantage of this and I'm going to enjoy the sunrise. And I would go for walks every morning at the beach to start my day. And that gave me a tremendous amount of peace. The other thing that I did was I said, I made a joke with myself, if I'm going to be locked down, I'm either going to come out of this a fat slob or in the best shape of my life. And I committed to getting into the best shape of my life. And like you heard the stuff about the marathon before. So the two areas were I was slowing down to enjoy the little moments and the sunrise every day. And I was getting myself in better shape.
I could definitely relate to that. Earlier on, I brought up a question. What do I love to do that I normally feel like I can't because of distractions? And I'm glad to hear that you found that for yourself. Because of the positive changes in your life, though, when things go back to normal, how will you keep them in your life?
That's a good question, Will. Thank you for asking it. I thought about this a lot. We've been able to pretty much run our business seamlessly through technology, and a lot of our clients like actually having the meetings online. So I don't necessarily think, for me personally, that I'm going to have to ever go back to 5 days a week in an office like I was before, which is, and for somebody who loves being around people, I'm surprised how much I am happy about that, because I do want that balance. I need that time to recharge. The one things I'm learning are, what I've asked myself during this time of COVID is, what are the things I want to say no to? What are the things I really just don't want to do anymore? And a lot of the things I did to develop business in my career was, I was at a lot of functions at night. I was leaving early in the morning. I was home later at night. It could be very draining at times. And I wasn't nearly as fulfilled as I am now. So I would probably say I found the things that I really enjoy in what I do, and I'm going to focus on doing those and get rid of some of the things that I just either didn't enjoy or realized that weren't nearly as productive as I may have thought they would have been. And some of those things are just going to a lot of events. I'm going to focus more on my deeper, more meaningful relationships, which I enjoy more and actually are more productive for me financially too. So it's a double benefit for me.
On the flip side, I feel like COVID has been a legit magnifying glass for the bad habits we have in life. What are one of those bad habits for you?
So for me, looking at my phone all the time is really something I have to work on improving upon. And so I think the good habit, the antidote to that, is really adding more mindfulness and structure into my day. And when I do that and I take the time to plan my day out and write down the things I need to do, I can focus on doing them rather than being distracted. When I don't really have a plan for the day, that's when I get into trouble and I'm out of control. I'm looking at 80 different things and I'm not getting anything done. So for me, it's really about having more mindfulness and not really being looking at my phone or trying to do three things at once. Just having my list and making sure I get stuff done. I think that's a great habit. And it actually, once again, structure to me equals freedom. That gives me freedom to exercise, be with friends, do other things that I enjoy. If I take 10 minutes or 5 minutes a night to just structure my next day, the day goes great. And when I don't do that, it's terrible. And when I try and multitask, it's terrible.
Obviously, planning is very important for you. So it's January 1st, 2021. Where do you want to be January 1st, 2031?
I want to be above ground. That's number one. That's number one. I want to be in top health. So if you ask me like the material stuff or whatever, I want to be able to run my fastest marathon in 10 years from now. I want to be able to be the best golfer in my life at that point. So I probably want to be a sub-5 handicap at that point. I want to be financially independent, you know, and I'm sure I'll be there at that point. And why do I want to be financially independent? Because then I can spend my time helping others. I find more fulfillment and joy helping other people get what they want. It really is a gift when you can help mentor people, coach people, help them achieve success in their life. To me, there's nothing more rewarding. I'm working with some of the business development team at our company, and it's been fun. We've been going through some of the books that I referenced before on habits and It Takes What It Takes, and seeing these people get inspired and excited about their future and having hope. For me, if I'm giving hope to people, that to me, that's a great life. And one of the things that I mentioned to reference the Strategic Coach program that I started in 2003, and one of the exercises they talked about was the retirement trick. You know, because a lot of times people say, oh, I'm going to do this until I retire, or then I can retire if I have this. And they said the retirement trick is you don't retire from things you love to do, right? So you focus on doing the things you love to do. And so I love doing what I do. I'll probably be doing much of the same thing. You know, hopefully I'm still with Altium and we're making great things happen there. I'm hopefully helping a bunch of other founders of companies grow their businesses. I'm hoping to play, maybe if I shift some of the hours in doing those things, where I'm playing a little bit more golf, I'm doing a little bit more travel, making it maybe a little more time to get and stay in shape. But other than that, I'm in a happy and healthy relationship with the woman of my dreams. What you know, purpose is life if you're not sharing it with somebody? So for me, I think it's all of those things, but it's not much different than what my life is like now, which I find incredibly fulfilling and rewarding.
So Dad, do you have any final thoughts to send these listeners off with as we conclude this episode?
A few things. And I've talked to you about, in my mind, the four C's. Maybe it's the five now. I don't remember.
Oh, but, yeah. Very familiar with the four
actually
C's.
Actually, it's the five C's. Maybe. I think I added one to it. But.
So can you share the five C's? I know I'm very familiar with it, but other listeners might not be. So if Dad, if you could do that.
Yeah. I've always talked about this with regards to when you come out of college. What's it important? And if you have these few traits in your life, you'll have a successful life, right? I mean, obviously you have to go to college if you want to become a doctor, a lawyer, or maybe other certain fields. But I always say, with all this information available to people that's out there, you can learn from the best founders of companies. You can learn from any expert subject matter. And they're probably better teachers than the ones you have at school. And a lot of people in education might not like hearing this. But I do think that if you come out of college with these traits, you have a confidence, you have the ability to communicate, you have intellectual curiosity, you have the ability to connect with others. And then you have the fifth one, which I thought about recently, was clarity, right? The clearer you are on things, the clearer on what you want, the more successful you'll be. But if you have those five characteristics or five traits, I think you can have an unbelievable life. And I probably think the most important one is having that continued intellectual curiosity, but then obviously confidence and ability to communicate really are important if you're interviewing for jobs or looking to build relationships with people. But those things are incredibly, incredibly important. The other thing is, I would just say that you want to continue to be learning, right? And there's all these resources available to you. I mean, I started listening to podcasts a few years ago, and I'm addicted to them now because I learn so much and it keeps me going. I continually get inspired by listening to stuff every day. So you asked me that question before about the marathon and what kept me going. It's really, I continue to listen to these people that I respect. The Tim Ferriss's, really, John Maxwell, unbelievable. Trevor Moad, Ed Milet, that James Clear with The Atomic Habits. Heather Monahan has this podcast about creating confidence. Those are ones I listen to all the time. And they're other ones I listen to for fun and entertainment. But those are the ones that kind of keep me focused and on track. And I just think there's so much out there for you that you can do when you're doing things you like. Whether it's, if I listen to a lot of those podcasts when I go for a run. So I'm accomplishing two things at once. Maybe that's multitasking, but I'm finding that it's really helping me be a better version of me, and I'm happier today.
Dad, I just want to thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate just having these conversations with you, and I look forward to having a lot more in the future. So thanks again.
Well, thanks so much. As a dad, it's really an honor to have you think enough of what I think to have me on your show. Most 19-year-old kids don't give a crap about what their parents think. So it's nice that you actually thought enough of me to have me on. It was a lot of fun. And yeah, we could have talked about a zillion other things. It's going to be a lot of fun watching you grow.
So that was a good time, and I hope you guys took a lot away from our talk and can use the tools we discussed in your own life. And don't forget to follow me at WJG23. That's my personal. And for the podcast, it's 19-Year-Old Shrink Podcast on Instagram. And I hope you guys have a great rest of your day. Take care. Have a good one.